be this Monday night.
So we're talking about the difference between Ashkenazim and Sephardim amongst the Rishonim. And Ashkenazim, or I should say Sephardim, by dint of the fact that they were surrounded by Arabic speakers, had that additional advantage of using Arabic. Look, to be sure, Rashi, about 30 times in his Perush, throughout Tanakh, especially in Mishlei, uses Arabic to help him understand difficult Hebrew words. We did that earlier, didn't we? We used Akkadian, we used Ugaritic, we used Semitic languages. The Talmud uses Chamite languages and Yefet languages to explain difficult Hebrew words. Right? I gave you some examples of that. If you could use those two languages, surely you should use Shame languages, Semitic languages, right? Of course, of which Arabic is one. Right? So therefore, those who are steeped in Arabic will be better Hebrew speakers. Plus the fact that the Sephardim were using two famous grammarians, Ibn Janaz and Ibn Khayyuj, as their sources, whereas the Ashkenazim were using Dunash ibn Labrat and Menachem Bar Chelbo. These names, some of these should be familiar to you. Rashi mentions them often in his parish. Okay? But in addition, there could be other sociological reasons, the Ashkenazim tended to be more literal in their translations. There's hardly an Ashkenazi commentary who says that there was anything but a snake that spoke to Chava in the garden. And there's hardly a Sephardic commentary of note that says that it was actually a snake talking to Chava. They all say it was the Yetzer Hara. An amazing compromise is made by Abravanel, a Sephardi, who says that it was a snake, but what Chava saw was the snake eating from the Eitz Hadas. And then she said to herself, wait a second, we call Eitz Hagan. The snake isn't allowed to eat from fruits. The Torah only said for animals to eat vegetables. Fruits are for humans. That's why the snake came in and said, you can't eat from any of these trees. That was her talking. That snake is not supposed to be eating from trees. How is he eating from that tree? He's not allowed to eat from any of the trees. So if he's eating that tree, I must be allowed to eat from that tree. Right? But anyway, the Sephardim do not have a snake talking to Chava, nor a donkey talking to Bilam, for that matter. Right? So you can ask, why do they split this way so dramatically? I'm not convinced that it's only because of a more rationalistic tendency of the Sephardim as opposed to a more, let's say, literalist or traditionalist type of tendency of the Ashkenazi. Right? Once you start allegorizing in the creation story, who knows what's next? Are you going to allegorize the Akedah? Right? You're going to allegorize our Avos out of existence? Yeah? However, I'm not convinced that's all it is. I think that, let's say, when Yeshayahu talks about a lion grazing with a lamb, and the Sephardic across the board, Mamish Radak, Ibn Ezra, of course, the Rambam and the Moreh Nevuchim, they all say, and Rambam in the Mishneh Torah, Hilchos Malachim, says, Al Yale Al Da'atcho, he quotes Yeshayahu's prophecy that we read on the 8th day of Pesach in Chutz Laretz. You guys are still in Israel in Pesach? Okay, so anyway, so you read it here. The Ashkenazic Mephoshim say it's really a lion, it's really a lamb, right? Animals will change their nature in the future. Machlokas in the Sifra. And the Mephoshim, like Rashi, Kara, Bojansi, and others who wrote on Yeshayahu, say that, it's real. These animals will change their nature. And the Sephardim almost across the board say that it's talking about, let's say, North Korea and South Korea, you get my picture, right? It's about people, nations, right? So there, I'm not exactly convinced of the difference that I just mentioned. It may just be that Jews living amongst Christians avoided the allegory as much as they could because Christians were allegorizing everything in the Torah. They were allegorizing bris. You don't have to circumcise the body. No. That's the Jews are making a mistake. God never wanted us to actually circumcise the body. You know, Christians revere the Book of Leviticus, so ask them why aren't they keeping kosher, for goodness sakes? Why are they eating shellfish? Why are they eating pork? Right? Because that's an allegory. You figure out what a pig represents and stay away from that representation. But the actual food, it's crazy. Right? The reform movement went that way too, but be that as it may, what I mean to say here is that when Jews living amongst Christians were influenced, and you should know that your average shul experience on a Shabbos morning in France and Germany at the time of Rashi and Rishpam, you had to hear an hour of a sermon from the local bishop of why Jesus is the true representation of biblical prophecies, and you couldn't go to Kiddush Club during that sermon. All right, this is real. Right? Pablo Cristiani was the guy in our film. Maybe you'll be able to see, I'm not sure, but led groups of priests that had to go into the shuls and pound away at the Jews. Right, so when they're explaining all these things allegorically, so the Jews in that framework avoided the allegorical interpretation, as opposed to the Jews living amongst Muslim lands who didn't have such considerations. Okay? What I'd like to do in the next hour or so is to go through a whole host of Ashkenazi commentaries, some of which, by a show of hands, when I mention the name, just tell me if you're familiar, you've ever heard the name. Okay? I just want to, just my own name, identification, just to see how people know. Bechor Shor. Yeah, pretty much, yeah? Okay, he's mentioned by Tosfos pretty often. He's Yosef Bechor Shor of Orleans. He is a very early commentary. He's a great defender of Rashi. And he's probably of what the commentaries we're going to learn now, the closest to, most compatible with Rashi's commentary. Okay. Quoted often by the Balei Tosfos and Shas. And I'm just going to mention a few commentaries of his. Okay. And that's what I'm going to do. We mentioned about 10 Ashkenazic Rishonim and the type of innovative commentaries of theirs. Bechor Shor was a great defender of biblical behavior. He, for instance, finds fault with Esav in the story of Yaakov taking the bracha from him. And Yaakov is fully absolved of any wrongdoing. And can anyone figure out why Esav is acting immorally in that story? And why would... I mean, Rashi at least tries to absolve Rashi of Yaakov of lying. I mean, we did that with the trap, Anochi. Esav b'chorecha is set apart. Bechor Shor says that Esav should have told his father when he was called him over for the bracha, "Daddy, I appreciate what your offer, but it's not mine. I sold it to my brother when we were younger. I never told you. You might have been ashamed, but it's not mine. You have to give this bracha to my brother." And Yaakov was only taking what was his. Now, maybe Yaakov shouldn't have done it on his own, but the added impetus of the fact that his mother told him to do this, as Rashbam points out, by the way, that his mother told him at that moment, "V'rav ya'avot sa'ir, God told me this bracha is yours." Right? Add that with the sale of the birthright, and Yaakov is justified in what he's doing. Rashbam says, you know, Yaakov was afraid of getting caught and being cursed. So his mother says, "Let the curse be upon me," and then Yaakov does it. What kind of good son who's afraid of doing something lest he be cursed is ready to do it? Okay, the curse will be on my mother. He said, she convinced him, "The curse will not come to me or you. God told me that this is your destiny. Do it." Esav is the wrong one. Now, why is Bechor Shor one of the great, great defenders? Remember, we learned about Ramban on the other side, who was, you know, he was very realistic, and what I'm about to tell you is the topic of David Berger's first book on Jewish-Christian relations in the Middle Ages, where he claims that the Jews living amongst Christians were the best defenders of biblical characters, as opposed to Jews living amongst Muslims, who had a more realistic approach to the biblical persona, like Ramban, Radak. Two excellent examples of this, but it doesn't explain why Ibn Ezra, who was also a Sephardi, did not live amongst Ashkenazim, was even a greater defender of the biblical persona than others. Right? Anyway, with Bechor Shor, he
for instance, he justifies Yehuda's behavior with Tamar. You know, Yehuda just goes over to a Stama woman on the street and says, what's your hire? That's the man who should lead the kingdom and be Mashiach, right? So he discusses a justification for him, if not a justification, at least an excuse. You know, the other Mephoshim just say, all right, it was Mina Shemayim that this is how the kingdom should start with two twins, right? But be that as it may, B'chor Shor is I'm not saying this is the hallmark of his Perush. He is like Rashi with Mufshat. Right? Okay. He actually is a long tract on Megillas Rus in Parshas Vayeshev regarding Yibum. This is not Chiddush though, where he discusses the pre-Torah nature of Yibum at the time of Yehuda. Okay, I'm going on to another Mefarsh, Rishon, Rav Yom Tov of Joini. That's probably not someone you're familiar with. He's called Tosfos Yom Tov, not the commentary to the Mishnah that you're familiar with, who wrote the commentary hundreds of years later. He asks, listen to some of these questions you probably never thought of asking. He asks, why was Yosef handing out food in Egypt? Should the man who's the mashbir of all the food be at the counter? Should have been in his inner sanctum in the room, keeping the records and putting information out on the computer for other people to do. What's he doing with the food handout? What do you think?
Interesting.
That's an interesting thing. I mean, Chazal say something like that about why Boaz was in his granary at night.
He
knew the brothers were going to come. He wanted to be there when they came. Right? That is not found anywhere before him. Right? Well, by the way, everything I'm telling you now is unique or first said by the person I'm saying now. Right? In other words, this is not something you saw in Rashi.
What's the name of
Yom Tov of Joini? It's spelled Joigny. It's a place in France. Okay. Why does an Evet get his ear pierced? So you know, Rashi says, the ear that heard an Harsina lo tignov or an Ochesh Amakecha should be pierced, right? So first he says that I have a problem with that reason because the Mechilta wasn't sure if this is an Evet Ivri o Eino Ella Avdo Shel Ivri. Right? Remember that Medrash? Rashi cites it, Medrash Mishpatim. I refer to it when we talked about Medrash Halacha. Right? Why should there be a doubt? And Nevet Kanani didn't hear Nochi at Har Sinai. Right? So he says there must be another reason why the ear is pierced. And he says that, a fascinating thing, hardly anybody ever gets wounded here. People have wounds all over the body. No one gets a wound here. If any other part of the body was damaged as a result of saying, okay, cut that off, that's a sign that you're my slave, right? Then someone could attribute that to some kind of accident. But if his ear is pierced, everybody will see that it happened because he wanted to be an Evet.
So why
to stay on as an Evet.
So why don't you do that immediately? Why did you do that after 7 years? Why does he have a simon that everybody recognizes?
Literally, because he wanted to stay on longer than the Torah required of him. Remember, this is a guy who could pay back a debt on a theft. Okay.
Where can you find the recording, by the way?
I'll tell you on Monday.
Oh, okay.
All right. So he has a fascinating explanation of Kilo Yirani Ha'adam Bochai. No man can see me and live. Traditional explanation is, if you see God, it'll overtax your brain, and it'll kill you. Your brain won't be able to be the command station to circulate blood and breathe. Right? He says, no. If you would contemplate God, right, you would no longer want to be trapped in Olam Hazeh. You would so much want to get into the next world. Lo Yirani Adam, and want to live. He also has grammatical nuances. Pasuk says, V'ha'avarta shofar trua. And then the same pasuk ends, Ta'aviru b'chol moshvoseichem. Why does the pasuk start off in singular and end up in plural? It's the pasuk about Yovel. So he says, this is an interesting concept in itself. He says, we start off with one person blowing the shofar for Yovel. Right? One person, the head, Rosh Beis Din, right? And at the end of Yom Kippur, to Aviru, everyone's blowing. It's an interesting concept. Unusual Beirush. Okay, I'll go to my next Rishon. The Bala Rokeach. I'm going to have maybe more to say about him at the end. You heard of him? Elazar of Worms. Very tragic figure. His entire family was killed before his eyes. In one of the Crusades. They left him for dead, and was very badly wounded, but managed to survive, walked around the house and saw every child of his and his wife killed. He writes about it in his commentary to Parshas Vayetze, where he says, I was studying Parshas HaShavu with my son, and they came in and killed all of us, and I dedicate these words to my lost family. He's suffering, you know, people who are, that we just read, you know, it's a perush, and the suffering they endured is sometimes amazing. Isn't this amazing perush? It says, V'hanachash haya arum mikol habehima. What's problematic with that? The nachash was more, first we have to explain what does arum mean. Usually it's translated as crafty. The nachash was more crafty than all the other animals. What's extremely problematic about that? What? Let's make sure that I have the word exactly right. Beginning with Perigimel. You're right. It says Chayas HaSodeh. V'nachosh ya'arum mikol Chayas HaSodeh she'osah Hashem. What's the problem? Nachosh is a chay. Good. Nachosh ya'arum mikol Chayas HaSodeh. The Rukeach says that it's just strange that arum, which is not a characteristic of any chaya, that the Nachash, who may have been Arum, but how is he more Arum than other Chayos? He's more Arum than the giraffe? Really? He's apparently the only Arum animal, Chaya. You get the point? How is he more Arum than other Chayos? So the Rukeach says, I can't believe that the word means crafty, especially since the Pasuk just before also used that word. Mamash just before. It's the previous Perek and then Bishop Jerome's Cheshbon. Of Bishop Langton's Cheshbon. The Prokim delineation, as I told you in the beginning of the semester, was made by Christians. Right? Okay, so it says, Vayushneim arumim ha'adam v'ishto v'lo yispo shashu v'hanachash haya arum mikol chayas ha'sodeh. He says the following. He says, the snake was more naked than other animals. Practically all other animals have fur, they have other kinds of skin on them, and but the Nachash's skin is the closest to human skin. And that's why of all the chayos, the Nachash had dealings with man. It's fascinating. Arum doesn't mean crafty there. It means what it means in the previous pasuk. Without fur. I may come back to the Rukeach later.
So what? So like, why is that so mind-blowing?
Why did why the snake more than any other animal did the snake come to do this to man? The snake was more like man. So I just want to say that of all the commentaries we're going to do, there's no one touches Torah Ta Pshat Remez Drash Sod like Rokeach. With the possible exception of the next one I'm mentioning, which is his Rebbe. I'm not sure why I'm doing the Rokeach before his Rebbe. But his Rebbe was Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. Remember I brought in his small parish? We were talking about the two tshuvas and Rav Moshe, about the ripping out some pages and putting that, right? If you recall what I told you then, Sefer Chassidim, don't be surprised by what you see there. that his Sefer Chassidim, as well as his Perush al Torah, is sometimes says that, you know, we just have it wrong. If I have to follow this exact rule, because if we did, then we'd bring about the Kates Mashiach immediately. Right? Remember, there was no codified Shulchan Aruch yet. Right? Rambam hadn't been written yet. So he wrote really a codification for his Hasidim. Follow these rules. You ever see Sefer Hasidim? There are two versions of Sefer Hasidim, one much longer than the other. And he has some guidelines that simply don't appear in the Talmud. Okay. He has an amazing heresh of absolving Reuven. You know, Chazal basically absolved Reuven of guilt from what's written in the text, where it says Vayishkav Reuven es Vayishkav es Bilha, right? Remember what Chazal say? Listen to this pasuk carefully. Vayhi bishkon Yisrael ba'aretz ahi, vayilech Reuven, vayishkav es Bilha pilegesh aviv, vayishma Yisrael. Can you be as creative as you could possibly be in order to absolve Reuven from guilt here, as the Sefer Chassidim does? Amazing. I mean, Chazal say that he moved a couch from one place to another, and he used bad judgment in how to teach his father to respect his mother. He should just talk to him. Don't act like that. You're rebelling, and it changes the framework of the family since you're the oldest. According to the Sefer Chassidim, listen to this: Vayhi bishkon Yisrael ba'aretz ahi, vayelech Reuven. Right? They lived in this place, right? And vayelech Reuven. Yaakov, after Reuven, switched the beds. Right? Banished Reuven from the house. Vayelech Reuven, he left. Vayishkav es Bilha goes on Yaakov. In other words, I'm not listening to you to treat Leah as my favorite wife now. Vayishkav es Bilha Pilegish. Right? Now it says Pilegish Aviv. So it would appear that Vayishkav goes on Reuven. You know what I'm saying? I mean, to our best knowledge, Bilha is not Yitzchak's Pilegish. Right? Nonetheless, he says that Vayishkav's Bilha goes on Yaakov. And that... It's a... strong kasha he just doesn't deal with, but the Pilegish Aviv just goes on what Reuven originally did by moving the couches around.
So they don't say that it's just forgery? Like you've just been saying, like, there's a lot of problematic things with things that some people think
should be. So I have no doubt that probably Rav Moshe Feinstein, there's no theological objection to this. It might be a theological objection to Rabbi Lachosid saying there's nothing wrong with homosexuality, it's just that it doesn't lead to Peru Avu. That's what he writes in his Perush. It's a Toeva. Right? Going to Sefer Chassidim, is it a Toeva to sleep with your wife who's pregnant? Or who's already passed her time for giving birth? It's strange, but that's what appears in that book. Remember I told you there were four things that were taken out? That's the second one. I'm not even going to tell you the third and fourth. You have to look it up yourself in the Tshuva. Okay, so, all right, anyway, it's what it is. Let me turn to a few other Rishonim, and then we'll you know, I still have a few more things from Hotziyua Bati Saref. He says, take her out and burn her. Right, about Tamar. So the Sefer Chassidim says, he wasn't going to burn her at the stake. burner means brander with a nun, for new or something, you know, like a scarlet leather or something like that, you know. Right. Okay. You know, the Rabbi Lachos said there's a novel approach to how the Torah, why the Torah calls 70, when if you number the people who go to Egypt, it's 69. Right? Remember, I think we discussed some approaches. The Rosh says it's rounded off. Rashi says it's Yocheved. The Ibn Ezra says that the 70th one is Yaakov himself. Right? We saw it appears in Shmos Rabbah that the 70th is Hashem, who told Yaakov, I'll go down with you to Egypt. Says Rabbi Lachosid, you're missing the boat. It says B'shivim nefesh yoredu avosecha mitzrayma. Yosef and his two sons are not counted in that. It's 66, and four of the sons were married. Where does he get that? It says in Bereishis Rabba. Four of the sons were married. What? Four? They all have kids. They're all coming with grandchildren. Right? No. Four of the grandsons were married. But that just begs the question, why are you counting the grandsons who were married, not the sons who were married? You should have added another, you know,
we should have talked about the sons or the grandsons.
He said, four of the sons of the Shvatim who were married. That's problematic. But anyway, it's just interesting that he, and the reason why he doesn't like Rashi's answer is because Rashi himself said that you're not allowed to have beer in the time of famine. How do we know that? Because it says that he had Ephraim and Manasseh b'terem tavo harav. Martinus learns from here that he could only have had them b'terem tavo harav because in time of rav you shouldn't be having beer. So he says, what about Levi? If Yocheved was born, remember the rav is 2 years old. If Yocheved was born just as they came in, that's a very long pregnancy. So he goes through a whole halachic arichus on this, which is the cause for his trying to come up with a cheshbon of how you get up to number 70. Everyone in this room might just prefer the Rosh's simplest explanation, right? But it's interesting that he was in on this. Rabbi Lachosid creates a dialogue between Paro and Yaakov that leads to Paro asking his age. Listen to this dialogue. Right? Yaakov asks Paro to allow him to return to Israel after the famine is over. Right? When he says, I'm only here for a short stay, Lagur. Right? And if you don't allow me, I'll purchase my own wheat and return on my own. Right? I'll return now, even during the famine. So Paro expressed surprise that such an old man expects to live for more than 5 years. Can you even expect to live more than 5 years? So he says, I haven't reached the age of my parent. That's when he starts to talk about his age. Okay. Finally, I'll just mention one more. He says that he points out, this Achronim says, I just saw this in the Meshech Chachma, maybe he wasn't aware that it's in Rabbi Lachosid, that by all of the furnishings of the Mishkan, it says, V'osisa, V'osisa. Hashem tells Moshe, you should make. When it comes to bringing the Aron, it says, V'osu Aron Atzeshitim. Very famous about Torah. V'osu. Why? Because every piece of the Mishkan represents a different aspect of the human experience. Shulchan is Osher. Menorah is Chochma. Every bit of the Mizbech, everything is Aron represents Torah, and the Torah is in plural because the Torah is the purview of everybody. All can partake regardless of their background. Okay, the Reed Detrani, you heard of him? Actually, two Reed Detranis, a grandfather and grandson. He's known as Rabbi Yeshaya ben Immanuel. Okay. He significant use of gematrias, Masoretic anomalies. Right? The read the Trani is published usually at the end of Mikros Gedolos. You'll find him in a number of Mikros Gedolos now. He's getting a little more popular now. They're printing him. Right? So if you run into a Masoretic anomaly, turn to the Mincha Shai if you can, or the read the Trani. Okay. He asks, why is it that after Paro dreams about the wheat, the sheaves of the Shibolim eating other Shibolim, right? It says Vihine Chalom. But after he dreams about cows devouring fat cows, thin cows devouring fat cows, it doesn't say Vihine Chalom. It could be the second time. You don't have to say Vihine Chalom. He was already used to it. Right? Went back to sleep after the first one. So the Reed Trani says that cow, if you had a dream of a cow opening its mouth and eating another cow, you'd probably wake up at that point and say, this is too crazy. Right? But a cow does have a mouth and does eat. So if it opens a mouth and you might last as long as it actually devours the thin cow. The fat cow. But wheat, for wheat to open up a what? The wheat devoured? It was so obvious, Vihine Chalom, immediately. But he didn't wake up as quickly when he dreamed about the cows, because cows do have a mouth to open up. Right? He says, Asher ein chorish v'kotzir. Cows used to plow then, and kotzir is the wheat. So that's why there are two dreams. Rashi just said there are two dreams, because Hashem is going to make this happen quickly. Okay. Interesting thing, the Reed the Trani writes, it says that Moshe, when he came up to Zippor, it says, this is what happened, Achar Shilucheho, after he sent her away. What's the common interpretation of this? He divorced her. When he saw that Hashem came to him at any moment, remember that angel that almost killed him? Right? Leiv Kasheyo Hashem? Because he wasn't ready for a divine visit. That's when he sent her back. How do we know he sent her back? Because when after he sees Mitzrayim, she's with her father. She shouldn't have gone in the first place. And the Medrash Aharon convinced him, what are you bringing, more Jews to Egypt? More Hebrews to Egypt, right? So, according to the Reed Trani, Achar Shilucheho, that he had to send her because he knew he was going to serve for 1 week as a Kohen in God's Mishkan. The first week, the Shivim HaMiluim, Aaron and his sons were Baalim, and Moshe was a Kohen Gadol. How can I can't be married to a Gioris. Anyway, it shows that he's applying later Torah law, interestingly. Okay. He notices that all the numbers in the beginning of Bamidbar end with a zero. He says it must be that the Torah rounds off numbers. And remind me, there's a beautiful Meshech Chochmah I have to share with you on that. There's such an amazing Meshech Chochmah on that, of why all the numbers end with zero. I'm not sure if I'll get to the Achronim today, but he asks in Parshas Matos, now you see that he's very interested in halacha. He asks in Parshas Matos, why did we have this din of Hagolas Kalim? We know the din of Hagolas Kalim, Parshas Matos, right? After Mechames Midyan. Wait a second. We fought against Sichon and Og. Why wasn't there Hagolas Kalim there? There should have at least been some instructions. The Kalim you take from Sichon and Og, you have to call a Shir Tavi Yevo Ba'esh, Tavi Yevo Ba'esh, whatever, right? You have the Kasha. Midian is not the first foreign war we fought where we took spoils. So why are we only in Midian? So he says Midian involved a small fraction of the forces of Israel. Against Sichon and Og, everybody fought that battle. When everybody fights, all tumas are permitted. Doesn't the Gemara in Chol and Daf Yud Zayin say that when the 7 years of Kibush Haaretz we ate kosle de chaziri, we could eat anything, including pork? Which is a real shverikite, because in Menachas Vechas Menachos, the Gemara tries to fetch out how they didn't have, they were able to eat the Yoshan when they came into Israel right away, right? They were worried about chodesh, but they weren't worried about pork. Anyway, the point is that he says that the Chemes Midian was just 12,000 men fought. So you can't say Tumahutra B'tzibur when it's just a small number of B'tzibur. Don't leave a man hanging on a tree. Why not? Ki kilalas Elohim talui. You know why I said Hashem's name like that? Because the Rita Trani says, there is a curse upon judges who promulgate a sentence for a man to be hanged. You're talking about, they worshipped the Avodah Zarah. Right? They should have looked for Kaf Schos. They could have. Ki kilalas Elohim talui. Elohim is whole, according to the Rita Trani. Not according to Onkelos, by the way, but okay. Kilas Elokim Talui. Right? The Gemara says in Sanhedrin it's a man created in God's image, and you're hanging God's image there, so take him right down. Have you ever heard of Sefer Hagan? Anybody? Sefer Hagan. Have you ever heard of Dr. Orlean? He teaches here. He teaches Tanachir. You should take him. I took him. Dr. Orlean put out the scientific edition on Sefer Hagan. That was his doctoral thesis, I believe. But it recently came out in a book form. Sefer Hagan is of Aaron ben Yossi HaKohen. Don't have a whole lot. I should have prepared more on his parish. I just want you to be familiar with it, though. There's also a sefer called Sefer HaTruma, Rav Baruch ben Yitzchak. I mentioned these two. I'm not going to give any examples of what they do, but these two start moving very much in the realm of drash. Just a smattering of your impressions. The perushim I've been given, what do you think? Pshat or drash? Mostly pshat? What did you say? Look at those. Sefer Hagan and Sefer Truma starts moving into the realm of drash. Okay? Listen to this perush. He says that if you're righteous, your lifespan is divisible by 7. And he shows that all righteous people have a lifespan divisible by 7. I shouldn't say righteous, I'm sorry. Anyone who's called Tum or Tamim has a lifespan divisible by 7. Who is that? Yaakov? Lived to be 147. Right. He gives a list. What about Noah? Noah is called Tamim, and he lived to be 950, and that's not divisible by 7. But he wasn't a Tamim for his whole life. He was only a Tamim from the time Hashem told him to build the ark. And that was 120 plus 350. Right? So he says, but the year of the flood should not be counted in that cheshbon. Right? So if you don't count the year of the flood, that's 469 years. And that's divisible by 7. This is moving into drash now. Okay. I have others to do. You know, of Shimon. Now, these names you probably never heard of. You Simcha ben Yishmuel. But there are collections. By the 1400s, there starts to be collections of Ashkenazic commentaries. These you're probably familiar with. Das Zakenu Mibali HaTosfos, right? Hadar Zakenu, Perush HaRosh, Minchas Yehuda, Rav Chaim Paltiel, Moshev Skenim, Paneach Rosa. The most famous of this entire list, which is really a collection of other commentaries, although he doesn't tell you this, and it's amazing, he got into the Torah's Chaim, the Chizkuni. You familiar with him? Right? He's a good, beautiful combination of drash and pshat, and he is, he got into one of Megoros Gedolos. None of these others did. Adarabha, the Das Zakenu Bali HaTosfos used to be in the traditional Mikros Gedolos, right? He was taken out. You know what I'm talking about, Torah's Chaim, right? There's a page of Torah's Chaim in there. Page 50.
Do you have it? There's a page of traditional Mikros Gedolos, and there's a page of, actually, I have two pages of the traditional Mikros Gedolos. You see it there? 51, is that it?
I think that's the one you're
referring to. Torah's Chaim, right. You see, that is the pagination of the Mosel Rav Kook. Right? You see, it's 9 volumes, the big blue covers. Right? Okay, but you see, the Cheskuni was put in, Daskuni was taken out.
That's just easy
because
they have literature on it.
Cheskuni is certainly the most comprehensive, yes. Daskuni is comprehensive too, but Cheskuni is more simple. Have you heard of Moshe Mikutzi? The Smak is an important parish on the Torah. Okay. His parish is very, very halachic. Listen to the kind of parish that asks this question. It says in Maseches Kedushin Avayin that you're not supposed to ask and inquire about a man's wife. How's your wife doing? So why did the angels ask about Sarah? So he says, it's okay, angels don't have a Yetzirah. This is a parish you find in the Sar Mikotzi. He was known as the Sar because he was elevated to a very high position of power by the King of England. There's even a story told about him. The Prince of Kutzi, it's called. Try to see if you can get it. It's about a 100-page story. It's a beautiful story. The Prince of Kutzi, C-O-U-C-Y. Right? So Tosfos sometimes just calls him Hasar. Quite often in the Seches Brachos. Okay, so he says that there's an interesting thing. We find this, it becomes popular after him, that Ammon and Moab were each excluded from the Kehillah for one reason. Ammon for not bringing bread and water, and Moab for calling out Bilam. He says that the two reasons don't go on both of them. Says why should? But this appears in Bereishis Rabbah, but it doesn't appear in Rashi, so I'm mentioning it. Why should Leah say, now that I had a third son, I'm calling him Levi because now my husband will be with me? Rashi says because she gave birth to her allotment of 3, 12 divided by 4. That's a reason for Yaakov to no longer stay with her. Now let me work on 3 with her. Yeah. So the Masami Kutzi just says very simple: Shimon on one hand, Reuven in the other hand. Now I have. They don't have a triple stroller, right? Now my husband has to go shopping with me. Who's going to hold Levi? All right. Okay, let me just do two more. Rabbi Yechiel Miparis, you familiar with him? Nebuch, he was martyred because he was involved in the disputations in France. You see, Ramban's disputation was in Spain, where the king was a little more enlightened. Joachim of Paris was such a tragic figure.
Right. What's his
first name? Yechiel Miparis. It's quoted in Tosfos. This is his parish. But do you see a movement in more? I'm going, but this is chronological, by the way. Do you see more drash coming in? We're moving towards drash. And it's going to continue. Right? He was using a lot of halacha. He says what Sar Mikotzi does is a precedent for what the Meshech Chochma did and the Tziv did and others in the 19th century. And we may just get there. I'm going to finish these two now, and I'm going to get to that problem momentarily. Rabbi Yechiel Miparis, he says that even though it's Rashi writes in Parshas Mishpatim that the right ear of an Eved Ivri is pierced, not the left ear, right? The right ear is pierced. And Rashi writes, because blood is placed on the right ear of the Metzora, right? Now, this is a question that ought to have been answered either in Maseches Kiddushin or in the Mechilta, Tishmos. It's not. It doesn't say which ear is pierced. But it does say in Parshas Metzora that the right ear of the Metzora gets blood put on it. All right, so Ozen, it's a Gzeirah Shava that an Arishon is making. That's Rashi's Cheshbon. So Yerichiyom at Pariz asks, why didn't he derive it from the consecration of the Kohen in Parshas Tzav, where it says put blood on his right ear? Why did he learn it more from Mitzora than from the Chinuch of the Kohen? So listen to what Rechimi Peri says. There's a good reason to learn from Mitzora, because what is the tool that the Torah says to use to pierce his ear? Remember? The tool that's used to pierce his ear is called a marzea. Same word as Mitzora. Says, I am your doctor. So Chilma Pariz writes, this is interesting because the Rambam seems to write something different than this. He says that following Torah is very healthy for your soul and your body. If you follow Torah, you won't need a doctor. Why is it that when Moshe names, listen to this example of close reading. Why is it that when Moshe names Eliezer, he says, Ki Elokei Ovi Be'ezri Ve'yatzileinu Michelev Paro. Right? But when he names Gershom, it says, Ki Omar Ger Onochi Be'eretz Nochriya. So that's a good case of close reading. Rashi should have noticed that. Why didn't say Ki Omar Elokei Ovi Be'ezri? That's in Mecher Paro. So he says because he only thought that once. When he had the baby, he was reminded of this and he said it. But Ki Omar means he was constantly thinking that he was a ger. It was a more constant thing. The reason to name Gershom was a more constant element in his life, as opposed to the need to name Eliezer. You may not like his answer, but you have to deal with his question. Listen to the kind of question he asks. Rashi says that Aaron went up to the mountain. No, it's not Rashi, it's a pasuk. With his big day kahuna, and he changed the kahuna clothes to his son. Wait a second. That's Me'ila. You can't wear big day kahuna if you're not doing the avoda. So he says that the Isser of wearing Bikdei Kehuna outside of the Mishkan is only at a time that the Avoda is taking place. That's a big Chiddush. Mar doesn't say that. Anyway, it shows that he is, this is all Rabbi Chiyomi Paris. This is what appears in his parish.
Where are these parish?
So these are all Perushim that are quoted by others. The Likutim I mentioned before, Das Kenim, Moshev Kenim, this is where they put it. You will not find a parish of Yechirmi Paris al HaTov. Okay. What's interesting is that the Torah's Chaim puts in Chizkuni, he doesn't cite others, but they're largely other words. In other words, the Chizkuni did a good job of incorporating the thoughts of other Ashkenazic Mefarshim before him and got into a modern day Mekoros Gedolos for it. Right? But Yechiel Meparis, who probably had a parish of his own, just didn't survive, is quoted 60 times by other Rishonim, and you can't make a parish out of that. Right? There were three brothers known as the Evru brothers, E-V-R-E-U-X. And they headed the yeshiva, the three names of Yitzchak, Shmuel, and Moshe, in Normandy, and the floodgates of Drash are open to these guys. I want you to see what's happening here, because for the next 300, 400, 500 years, we're about the year 1400 now, for about the next 400 years, you're not going to find a strictly pshat commentary. We're steeping into Drash.
What year are we now?
We're about 1400 now.
Pshat is all written, yeah.
Drash is a Mayim Novea. Pshat. Now you see why Rashbam only ever writes one Perush on every commentary. Never writes two Perush on the Drash. For sure. It says in the Pasuk, when Yosef came and was accosted by Potiphar's wife, it says, Ve'ein ish me'anshei habayis shom babayis. It's very verbose. He writes, Yosef lost his ishness. This amazing parish, because it's similar to the parish that says that Yosef did not do anything because he saw a picture of his father. You get it? He was helped from outside. I always understood that to mean that it's not that a picture of his father came up. No, the picture was his picture that he conjured in his mind. You know what I'm saying? But it wasn't some extra outside of Yosef assistance. But according to this parish, Ein Ish, he lost his Zachrus. Something happened to him. Maybe he took a cold shower or something. In other words, he made it that he had no Zachrus. That's what he writes. This is how he was able to withstand Potiphar's advances. Now, it's interesting because Tosfos in the Sechah Sota cites this. He cites this parish, May Achei Ivara, I Aleph Yud Vav Vav Reish Aleph. E-V-R-E-A-U-X. He cites this. Sota Tav Lamed Vav Amud Beis. For how he explained how Yosef managed to withstand Potiphar. Tosfos and so the Tav Lamed Vav Amud Beis. Alright. Adkan the Ashkenazi. Sephardic commentaries are this time are, I would say, fewer in number. Right? Don't have this kind of Mayan Novea. Power, the balance of power even in the halachic world was already shifting. You know, because in the time of Rashi, still the Sephardim made up most of the Chachamim. This would continue to shift. The Gerush Sephard. And when I say that the expulsion that took place at the end of the 15th century, don't forget that was on the heels of 100 horrific years of what's called the Inquisition. Right? The Spanish Inquisition started 100 years before the expulsion, and that very seriously quelled Torah scholarship in the Sephardic world. So hardly anything comes out from this community here. I mean, look, Bravanel is certainly a serious commentary. We discussed this Sforno before. Serious commentaries, and we've shot commentaries. That Kedis Yitzchok, that's certainly moving in the realm of Drash. From the standpoint of the Mikros Gedolos, the only thing that comes out in the next few hundred years is the Kli Yakor and Or HaChaim. It's amazing. We have the Torah Chaim that wants to present to us the best commentaries that you can use on a week-to-week basis in learning Parsha, in studying Chumash, right? And in the Torah Chaim's page, there's nothing after 600 years ago. Right? 550 years ago. You know what I'm saying? So the Mikros Gadol is the more traditional Mikros Gadol, you know, before this, I'm sure you're familiar with the page, it's on right after, page 51, pages right after that, included a Kabbalistic commentary, or a Chaim, and a homiletic commentary, a Kli Yochor. To round off the material again. You can't put the same vegetable in the salad. Even like this type of cucumber and that type of cucumber, you can't put 17 lettuces in a salad. You got to put different tasting things, right? So Kabbalah and homily, Kliyakos, beautiful homiletic commentary, is what rounded it off well. But I think the Torah Chaim omitted those two. I think it's obvious because they're not popular in the more rationalist world we live in today. Although I have to say the Or HaChaim HaKadosh is very popular in the Hasidic circles today. You know, you ever see it? Any of your yeshivas have Or HaChaim shirim? They have them now. All over. You go to Borough Park. You go to any of these minion factories. They all have Or HaChaim shirim. So he's come back in because Kabbalah is not only popular with Madonna. It's popular with Kabbalah Center, but it's become more popular in some more mainstream circles as well. And what basically happened, like are you familiar with the Piasetzna Rav, for instance, the Ish Kodesh, his parish to the Torah? Right? When they're killing everybody around you, and you don't know when you're going to be alive in a month, you're not concentrating on the precise shoresh of this word and Ibn Ezra's pshat pursuits. Your parish is going to be much more hinged in Kabbalah, in understanding the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the homiletic message of the text, right? So that's what happens during all these years of profound suffering. In the midst of this, I must admit, a parish that does not appear on the Torah, but prominently in the Vehman Ksuvim, is a parish by a man named David Altshuler. Aaron is his son, who wrote most of it, but the son very nicely allowed the entire parish to be called Mitzudas David. His goal was simply to explain difficult words. That's called Mitzudas, correct pronunciation is Tziyun. Mitzudas Tziyun. And concepts are explained in a commentary called the Tzudas David. He only did the Rebbe Shalom and Yishayahu. He died, and his son finished it off, his son Aaron, and very nicely, in honor of his father, allowed the entire commentary to be called the Tzudas David. Okay. So the very interesting thing is that he was committed, like Rashi says, was committed above all else to give pshat, and he succeeded. So he's very popular. What makes a commentary popular? Go look up, go in his farm store, and see who's in his farm. You will not find a single sefer on Tanakh with just the Radak. Although there is one parish, because he had a publishing company, that he was very close with, is the Malbim. You will find the Malbim. But even if you buy a Malbim, it's with Rashi and Mitzvahs. Right? Okay, I don't want to concentrate too much more on that. But so I'm giving you the history of where commentary is moving over the last millennia, from 1000 to 2000. Let's review. Yes.
Why is it that the Kabbalistic version are always written in a much more obscure style?
Because it's supposed to be. The Ramban already said, my Rebbe told me, when Yitzhak Sakinahar said that keep your Kabbalistic notions to yourself. Some say that every parish of Ramban has something hidden in it. It's amazing. But he hid it, he was told.
Why today is it so much more out there? Is it so much more open?
I have a good answer to that. I'm not sure. I mean, I will say that this very interesting thing is that in the Muslim and Christian worlds, their mystics were way out of the mainstream. They persecuted their mystics. In the Torah world, some of our greatest mystics were right in the mainstream of the halakhic world, the mainstream world. The greatest capitalist of the generation that produced the Shulchan Aruch was the author of the Shulchan Aruch. Yosef Karo, great capitalist. Rabbi is considered a great halachist. Right? Rabban is a great, certainly the greatest capitalist of his generation. Rabbi Yona, need I go further than the Vilna Gaon? Right? So that's just. I'm afraid today you have people studying Kabbalah but can't read the Pasuk with Rashi. You know, that's I don't know if I answered your question. But Maisa, the pursuit of Pshat got a nice boost with the parish of the Metsudos and the Vimon and Ksuvim. Why he didn't write in Torah, he states, because he feels that that's like a patch to Rashi. Rashi is by his design, but I'll admit, I will delve into Agadah Mi'Hasheves Divrei Mikra. When Rashbam runs into a Mikra that needs Yishuv, he says, I'm not going to comment at all here. It's over Mishkan, etc. Tumah Tahara. Okay. What happens around the year 1800 with the Jews leaving the ghetto and the Jews starting to be emancipated and the more scientific study of Torah is going to be a movement and a pushback. Okay? The movement which comes along, it's almost natural, with the reforming of Judaism, right, together with a religious movement called the Reform Judaism. Some of the early reformers were acknowledged scholars. I didn't say Talmidei Chachamim, but I'm saying scholars. And their scholarship began to treat Torah and Tanakh like any kind of literature. Right? And there was naturally pushback up against this. Right? And you're bombarded with, let's say, a German community. Try to figure out what Pirushim we're talking about. When you're bombarded with a German community who looks at some parts of the Torah as barbaric and cultic, and they have to get on with the times and be more cultured like the German high society, and you are dedicated to take your profound skills of the Hebrew language, you should be giving it away by now, and your deep understanding of how to interpret Torah, to present a perush to the people that's a Kiddush Hashem in itself, and has lasted a good 150 years, and everyone's still using it. You see, yeshiva named in his name, half a mile from here, and talking about Shimshon Rafal Hirsch, the boy is named after him, and it's amazing. He was born in 1808. And his daughter was married to the first rabbi of my shul, and this Hillel Klein. And his daughter just passed away a few years ago, like 180 years old. So Shimshon Rafal Hirsch's granddaughter just passed away. Isn't that amazing? Someone born in 1808 just had a granddaughter that passed away. So anyway, so his parish of HaTorah, and ask yourself while I'm talking, does this make it a parish? This parish of HaTorah, or is it just, you know, how to respond to German reformers when they have objections to what the Torah says? He had such a great command of the Hebrew language that
that a dictionary just came out of his use of the Shorashim. It's well beyond the Radak. Amazing, amazing dexterity of what to do with words. To be sure that Vilna Gaon does this kind of thing also, right? Like if I ask you, what's the difference between Sason and Simcha? So he says it's a function of the difference between Tzemach and Tzitz. One happens quickly, one happens slowly. You get it? Tzemach, Tzemach. Sason, Tzitz. Quickly. He's constantly doing that, showing how letters interchange. Rashi says that, by the way. Rashi says in a few places in Sefer Shatoro, listen, look at me and see. Any word in your mouth that starts in the same place, can interchange in your page. Right? Just look where the word de and p are not in the same place. One is de on your tongue and one is p on your lips. Right? Okay, it's amazing what Shimshon HaKadosh does with these kind of things. Right? For instance, he had a polemic against reformers about how cultic the Torah is with respect to the purification of the Metzorah. If there's blood on his thumb, blood on his earlobe, and blood on his big toe, what kind of toe? Any book that has it in it doesn't deserve to be studied, and we shouldn't bother gladdening our lives by such a book. Right? Shimshon HaKadosh says that our tradition is that the Metzorah is atoning for slandering others. He used the one thing on the human body that differentiates us more than animals, that differentiates from animals more than anything else, and he used it in a negative way. So the Torah is going to put blood on parts of his body that show his differentiation with animals. Animals only have these four. Right? Sociologists will tell you it's because of this part of the body that we've been able to invent and create. This is a very creative part of the human body. Because of this, we've been able to hold on to a tongs and heat things. Without it, we couldn't invent. Can you hear this? Disposable thumb? Or opposable thumb? Okay, so anyway, that's what we put the blood on the thumb, on the toe, and really we should put blood on the lips. It spoke the Lashon Hara, but we can't, it's not kosher. So let's put the blood on the thing that took, that received the Lashon Hara. You think that's barbaric? Well, it's more barbaric for a human being to slander. Anyway, he had polemics against others that shows that whatever the Torah says transcends from Har Sinai to modern Germany, and it fits, it guides us. And his whole life was to show, not unlike what we did when we talked about archaeology here, about why separating milk and meat still speaks to us. Right? As we show that God is the author of life and death, even if there are no pagan cults that are doing this ritual. So Shimshon HaKadosh was pushing back. You see what's happening around the 1800s. There's this Wissenschaft des Judentums. There's this Jewish scientific approach that saw the Bible as nothing different than Shakespeare. Whatever aspect, whatever literary approach you take towards determining whether this is what Shakespeare meant or that's what Shakespeare wrote, you should take to the Torah. This led to wholesale emendations. It led to wholesale understandings of Torah that not necessarily, of course, according to halacha or that things actually happened. It led to biblical criticism, to multiple understanding, multiple readings that were put in all into one package. Multiple names of God must refer to different authors, right? So there was a tremendous pushback from the commentaries of the 19th century. I just mentioned the first, Shimshon HaKadosh. Let me mention the second, is the Malbim. The Malbim printed his commentary to the Torah alongside the Medrashei Halacha. Obviously not in Bereshis, because there is none in Bereshis, but he printed Shmos with the Mechilta, Vayikra with the Sifra, and Bamidbar and Dvarim with the Sifrei, right? In order to show that Chazal had not simply the best, but the only
possible approach towards the biblical text. In an ingenious direction necessary to take at this time, his goal was to tell the Jew, you cannot translate or explain the biblical text before seeing the Medrash HaHalacha. He felt that the Jews were not steeped enough. They learned Talmud, but they weren't steeped in Medrash HaHalacha. How many of you have ever opened up a Medrash HaHalacha? I'm not going in order of history now, because this book was written in the earlier part of the 20th century, and then I'm going to go back to the Netziv. But the Torah Tmima wanted to do the same thing with the Talmud. Right? Just as the Malbim technically is not a parish to the Torah, it's a parish to the Medrash HaHalacha on the Torah, so too the Torah Tmima, I'm sure that you've probably used, everyone has used the Torah Tmima, right? The Torah Tmima's notes are quite excellent, and he gives you the text, of course, there's Onkelos and Rashi, and then you have various Gemaras, mostly in the Talmud Bavli, although he occasionally brings up other sources, sometimes even a Tshuva or two, and he explains how that source viewed the biblical text. Right? I will admit that the Torah Tmima was sometimes given to flights of fancy, and there is one much more scholarly work called the Torah Shlema. Are you familiar with it? Torah Shlema, Menachem Kasher, lived almost to be 100. He did not quite finish his amazing lifelong work. It started gracious and just went to Matos. He didn't get to the bar. Nebuch, he had a son who wanted to continue, and he outlived his son. His son started to work on it, and when his father got very old, and his son died young. Anyway, he didn't finish it, but the Torah Shlema often points out that the Torah Tmima took flights, so he took credit for certain things that others did before him. I mean, it doesn't indicate nefarious intent. It's just that the Torah Tzmima often writes in his Perush, this has eluded the commentaries for so long, and I finally have revealed the truth of what this means. Right? I'll just give one quick example of this, because there are 50. I'll take a question in a moment. There is a minhag that is mentioned amazingly in Hilchos Aveilus. I was going through my skin this past week. I was just sitting there with, you know, of course, talking to a lot of people, but you know, when I had some downtime, you know, so I went ahead with the Daf Yomi on Shavuos. But so you can learn Hilchos Aveilus. So there's this crazy halacha in Siman Shinai and Dalet that says that if a bechor passes away, no Aveilus for a bechor. No Shiva, no Shloshim, no Yotzeit, nothing. Right? Bechor, let's say someone who had a pidyon hapeh, there's no Aveilus for a bechor. And the Ramah writes, this is a wrong minhag, it's a ta'us, we should do away with this minhag. Now, the Ramah does not write in his glosses every, you know, Tom, Dick, and Harry minhag. He only writes about the ones that he feels took some kind of root that he has to uproot. You get it? Right? So where does this come from? So Torah Tmima writes this Ramah. Remember I told you, it's not always a Gemara. He writes this Ramah and he says, I found the source. It says that when Yehuda had two sons. The first was called Er, because he was robbing Hashem. And he named the second Onan, because for him he would mourn. See? He didn't mourn for Er. Now, first of all, he could be wrong with respect to the Targum's intent. It could be that he didn't mourn for Er, not because he was a Bechor, but because he was Ra. Right? Second of all, as the Torah Shlema points out, there are four Achronim before the Torah Tmima who point out that was the source. What are you taking credit for? Cite the other guys. Right, but he didn't see it. All right, but anyway, he often does this kind of thing. But it's still extremely valuable parish. An index to the Torah Tmima has just come out. I didn't need to go to this farm state and get anything in the world, but it's out for about 10 years already, but the index of Torah Tmima is very valuable. Okay. He lived here in New York in the 30s. Okay, yes, now your question.
Yeah, why is it like the Gemara was always, like the Talmud Bavli was always accepted in the course of study, and the Midrash Halakha never like studied or never?
It's a great question. There's a raging debate going on this. you read the Jewish Review of Books? Chaim Soloveitchik reviewed a book recently and wrote a vitriolic review of this book by Natalia Fishman, I think is the author.
about the authority of the Talmud Bavli. I mean, he showed me really vitriolic and correct. There's no expert like that Rav Chaim Soloveitchik about the Ashkenazi community that she writes about and her idea of how authoritative the Talmud was for them. And he rips it apart. I just mentioned this. If you want to look at the Jewish Review of Books of the last two editions, you can see what some very interesting give and take. It's entertaining reading to begin with. I would say that the reason why the Medrashei Halacha did not have the popularity with the people is for a simple reason, is because it is not codified well. What do I mean? If you want to know the laws of Pesach, you've got to look in the Mechilta in Bo, you've got to look at the Mechilta mentioned in Parshas Isisa, you've got to look at the Sifra in Emor, you've got to look at the Sifra in Balaras. The Gemara has Maseches Tochen. The Gemara got this organized again. So the Rambam had to write it, it's codified again. But yeah, correct about that.
Yeah, we don't have Gemara.
But still, it's at least it's under the rubric of Maseches Tochen. Once they stopped learning Medrashei Halacha, where if a Gemara cites Medrashei Halacha, it says D'Tanya, right? It's a brisa, so it's already outside of the scope of the Mishnayos. So once it was pushed aside for the Mishnah, it never came back until the moment. I use it extensively. Okay, let's go to the Netziv. Okay. The Netziv is the quintessential Rosh Yeshiva, and his Kerish is extremely innovative. Posting still uses commentary to the Torah for modern day Shilas. He has phenomenal. I mean, what more new things can you say? Right? But he's just. His goal was, no doubt, to show the accomplished chacham nuances of how the perfection of Torah. And I think of it just a tshuva that Eliezer just pops into my head about when medical hospitals were starting to be introduced. If you go to such a hospital, you have an advantage that this hospital has better treatment for you, right? Because you have top students. They're not only going to medical school, they're actually walking around seeing actual cases and actual patients. Not on cadavers, but on living bodies. The problem with that is that it might be embarrassing for all these young students to be crowded around a woman's bed who just gave birth and look at her stitches or something. And so as the question was asked of the Tzitzel Yezer, does each patient have to give their permission for the students to come around and look at them? So he cites a Netziv. He said the Netziv discusses the reasons for why a Metzora has all the young Pirchei Kahuna, that says the Kohen should take all the young boys with him to look at where the Tzaras is in order to Paschim. So it says the Medrash Halacha, why are we embarrassing this person so much by bringing all these little boys to look post the mitzvah, but these young boys looking at who knows where this Tzaras is, right? Might be very embarrassing. It says, well, that the Tzarua didn't care about embarrassing the object of his lashon hara, so let him be embarrassed. So Tzitz Eliezer learned from here that we need the patient's permission. The patient doesn't have an epidectomy because he embarrassed someone. Right? It's only a tzarua that gets people to look and as a punishment. It's not that Tzitz Eliezer had others who objected to this. Look at the Sifra. The Sifra gives two reasons why we take these young boys to look at what may be an embarrassing spot. One is because to reveal this person who revealed someone else, you get the mida keneged mida, right? But also says because Tzaraas is a very, very complicated type of process to Paskin. And if they don't get the good picture of what it is, not just in a picture book, but if he doesn't get a picture on the actual body, they won't know how to Paskin properly. Well, that certainly applies to medicine. Right? Anyway, but to use the Metziv this way is just an interesting thing. There were many examples of this, but the Netziv, you tried to use Torah to talk to the Jew in the 19th century of and it still does. I don't feel that it has been so innovative that some yeshivas they didn't study this much. It's called Hamikdavar. When it first came out in his lifetime. When it first came out in his lifetime, he wrote notes on the side of it, and they just came out with an updated version of the Hamikdavar, bound in leather, with his additional notes put in. It's almost the first. The author, usually these books came out after the person died, right? And to have him write personal notes on the side of a published book in his lifetime, and then incorporate that, that's an amazing thing. I'll conclude today with the Meshech Chochma. And I think I alluded to a Meshech Chochma before. I just did, this is close to my heart. This year is my Rishon that I'm teaching in Shul on Shabbos morning. I think, as you saw a few weeks ago, it was a Meshech Chochma. And we talked before about why all the numbers in the Midbar end with zero. Listen to this. This is just amazing. It says that in Parshas Mishpatim, in Parshas Yisro, it says that there were certain people put in charge of amounts of Jews. There were people in charge of tens, hundreds, and thousands. So if you had 54,376 people in your tribe, right? So you had certain thousands in charge of the thousands, certain hundreds in charge of the hundreds, and tens. So if there were, let's say that the tribe ended with the number 73, right? So there were seven men, each one in charge of 10 Jews. Right? The last one was in charge of 13. Right? So the Torah just rounded off because there's no such thing as a Sar HaEchod. So the last Sar HaSara got 13, but it just was counted as 10 because he's only a Sar HaSara. They counted, okay, how many Sari Alephim are there? Are there 50? Okay, 50,000. How many Sari Alephim? 4? Okay, 54,400. And how many? 10? And that's how they either put people in charge of the various tribes. So this is why all the tribes end with zero. It says, of course their tribes ended with 3, with 6, with 4, right? So one way that you say is, okay, they rounded it off. If there were 4, it got back to zero, the earlier zero. If it was 6, it went back to the next, it went up to the next zero. So the Meshech Chochma asks, so why did the Bechorim end with 22,270? Should have rounded off? 22,300, like the Levium. Levium rounded off to 22,000. Right? Remember, Moshe is accused of being a ganef. You got your brother 273 times 5 shkolim. There were enough Levium to go around. You count up all the Levium, there were 22,300. Why did he have to get money from those 273 extra bechorim? You know what I'm talking about here? When the Bechorim changed to Levi, of course, Rashi answers. Tell me, what is it? Oh, come on, guys. It was just last week.
They were both.
Okay.
They were both. These were 300 Levium who were also Bechorim. And so they couldn't offset the Bechorim. Alright, so the 273 Bechorim who were not offset by a Levi had to pay, like we pay a pinyon event, 5 shekel. This doesn't disprove, by the way, the Bechor Shor, who says the reason why we pay 5 shekelim for a pinyon aben is because a 30-day-old child at the end of Ayikra and the Parsha of Arachin is worth 5 shekelim. Those Levium were older. They should have paid the Arach of whatever age they were. Right? According to the Bechor Shor. Still something. Lemaisa, when it comes to Mamanos, you can't round off. You have to pay 5 shekelim. I want to know the exact number. Close with one last, this amazing Meshech Chochma. Listen to this. He says that the Torah mentions shkolim many, many times. There's shkolim all over the Torah. Abba me'ol shekel kesef over l'chodos ocher. What shekel? It appears 50 times in the Torah. How come in only three places does it say Esrim Gevra HaShekel? It says in Parshas Kisisa. It says it in when redeeming a property in the middle of Yovel. It says that you pay a certain amount per year depending on how close the Yovel is. And then it says Esrim Gevra HaShekel. Right? And it says it here in the Parsha of the redemption of. Again, the three places are the Chazi Shekel and Parshas Kisisa, the Aruchim, and here when it talks about redeeming the Bechorim. No other places. In other words, it doesn't say, and if he is Mefateh, this Pesula, so pay the father 50 Shekel, which is 1,000 Geber. It doesn't say such a thing. So Geber and Shekel, only these three places. So the Meshech Chachma says, the only time the Torah tells you how many gera are in a shekel is when the shekel has to be broken down, like chatzi shekel. So that's 10 gera, right? When it comes to breaking down how much to pay for the field, it's 50 shekel for a tract of land that's called a sosayim, right? So, but it depends on what year of the olah. Remember, it's one shekel and one pundion per year. Right? 49th of a shekel. 49 years, you get up to 50 shekel. Right? Okay? So, there too, since it might be broken down. Right? It might be 7 7/49 of a shekel. So I got to know how many gera that is. You got it? But what about when they're paying for the to redeem the Bechorim? 5 times 273 is 1,365. Right? 1,365 is divisible by 3. Aaron and his two sons got the shekels. If it's divisible by three, why couldn't they just give him your amount of shekel, your amount of shekel, and your amount of shekel? Why do you have to say it's from Gira Shekel? So he says, this is why the Gemara and Arachin says that when they shared the shekelim, Aaron got two parts. He got half, Elazar got a quarter, and Itamar got a quarter. 1,365 is not divisible by four. So the Torah had to say it's from Gira HaShekel. Okay. Alright, every Nitzav you have to do this. But he is such a close reader on why, by these two Karbanos it says such and such a thing, by these two it doesn't. It's very, very close reader. What? I'm doing the Meshech Chachma now. Yeah. He's the most quintessential close reader of Torah. More than Rashi. Remember when you came early, we met the Meshech Chachma here on the Shabbos Yidur Bami, Parv Ruchel Kosa. Remember, he's such a medachtek. Really, if I would say, which Achron would Rashi have the most nachas reading? I'm going with Meshech Chachma. Okay, let's stop in the February. I know it took you a little late, but I have to just make up a couple extra minutes for some of the days we missed. And is okay that I'm there for now? The questions. I'm sorry. I fell. In reality, today is it's just not the last month. Every day, I've been taking my father to see my mother and come to this class, and I go pick him up and take him home, and it's the whole day. Today, I didn't do that. So today's a little easier. So the next class, we have Monday and Tuesday. We're supposed to have a test on Wednesday.
I'll leave your class.
Is it
Monday? No problem.